Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part, and I'm your host, Vincent Treewell. Tonight is going to be a bit of a special episode. I do not have a guest, but that's fine, because there's been just an explosion of weird news in the last few days that I can't resist the urge to commentate on. So, we're going to be talking about the Long Island serial killer. We're going to be talking about Tupac, and we're going to be talking about Disclosure. Now, hold on with it. I know Disclosure is not a popular subject, but just bear with me because I think this is kind of important. So anyway, in the last few days, several things have happened in the ufological community, but also in the true crime and conspiracy unsolved mysteries worlds. And I guess I'll start with the new events in the case of the Long Island serial killer. I remember when this first occurred, and it was a huge deal, and it was considered rather unsolvable. Quote from yesterday's New York Times, pretty authoritative source. In December 2010, Officer John Malia and his police dog Blue were combing Gogo Beach, a remote stretch of sand on the south shore of Long Island, when they found human remains. The police would later determine they belonged to Melissa Bartholomew, a tiny 24-year-old from the Bronx, worked as a prostitute and was last seen in July 2009 when she told a friend she was going to meet a client. 2 days later, the police found the remains of three other women, Amberlynn Costello, Megan Waterman, and Maureen Brainerd Barnes. Like Ms. Bartholomew, they were petite in their 20s and worked as escorts. Discovery of their bodies bound at the feet or ankles and wrapped in burlap terrified residents of Long Island, devastated the victims' families, and led to a 12-year investigation marked by dysfunction and disarray. Six other bodies, including four women, a man who was never identified, and a 2-year-old girl, were discovered in the following weeks. On Friday, that would be this Friday, the police finally announced an arrest. Rex Huerman, 59, was charged with first-degree and second-degree murder in the deaths of Ms. Costello, Ms. Waterman, and Ms. Bartholomew. He is considered the prime suspect in the death of Ms. Brainerd Barnes, who disappeared in 07. So, I mean, this is huge. This has been this unsolvable case for quite some time. And now they have someone in custody. And, you know, obviously anyone who's accused of a crime is innocent until proven guilty. At the same time, police and prosecutors don't tend to bring murder cases they don't believe they can prove. So this seems very, very solid and interesting, as this may be the resolution of the Long Island serial killer mystery, which there have been so many theories, including that this was a mafia dump site, that there may have been a group of people involved. There are all sorts of things. And now we're seeing some real action after, you know, over 12 years. As technology improves, it's really, really hard to get away with murder. Take that into account if you're having bad thoughts. Yes, it's murders. Every murder, in my humble opinion, can be solved if enough time and effort and resources are put into it. In today's world, this isn't the Wild West. This is DNA, security cameras everywhere, the internet, you know, touch DNA, all sorts of things, almost all of which end up being involved in this case. As they go in today's New York Times, as they go further into Rex Huerman's life, They point out that he's 59. He's also married. Yeah. To quote one of his neighbors, Frankie Musto, who lives two houses away from Mr. Herman, "I guess people don't expect a serial killer to be murdered." Boy, was that a Freudian slip. "I guess people don't expect a serial killer to be married," said Frankie Musto, who lives two houses away from Mr. Herman in Massasauqua Park, a bedroom community an hour from Midtown Manhattan. Ms. Musto, I guess Frankie is a woman's name. Ms. Musto was standing on her porch discussing with family and neighbors how a man police officials described as a demon that walks among us could remain married for years. During the years that investigators say Mr. Herriman was preying on young women, he lived in the Red House with his wife, Asa Ellerup, 59, and their two children. People are going to think that's really weird, but those are only people who haven't really paid much attention to other serial killers, and that frequently they are married and they do have families and they compartmentalize their lives. That was John Wayne Gacy. That was Dennis Rader, who was revealed to be the BTK killer. That's not really as strange as it sounds. The whole thing is they, and this is not my term, this is a commonly used law enforcement term, they compartmentalize. This is the weird part of, no connection to the show, but this is the weird part of their life where they go and do horrible things. And then they have a normal life outside of that. And they keep it in boxes, you might say, mental boxes. As I've discussed before on the show, I used to work with a guy. His name is Phil Wenzel. He's currently doing life without hope of parole in a federal prison in, it's either Arizona or New Mexico. I don't really keep that close track. He was a sergeant on the sheriff's department. In his spare time, he abducted, raped, and filmed preteen girls. He was eventually caught and put away, and he's in the federal system for the rest of his life. If he should, in some impossible way, get an appeal, he can come back to Wisconsin and serve the over 100 years he has facing there, which he's already been sentenced to. I can tell you this, working with him, I had no vibe whatsoever. We weren't friends. Of course, you're not going to find anybody who will admit to being his friend, but no, I thought he was kind of a weasel, and I thought he was a self-promoter who was trying to climb the ladder. But I never once got a vibe that he was doing horrible, violent acts with children. That just did not occur to me at all, nor to anybody else. People who do these type of things, that's how you become serial. If you look like you're the kind of person who would do something like that, you get caught real early. Okay. The people who are serial killers and serial rapists and serial any bad thing manage to blend in with everybody else. That's the whole deal. And that's apparently, and again, these are accusations, but we'll see what happens in court. But that's apparently what the guy in Long Island was doing. He was blending in rather perfectly with everybody around him. So, yes, results remain to be seen, but a fascinating development in a case that many, including myself, doubted might ever be solved. So we shall see what happens with the Long Island serial killer case. In a completely unrelated story, but also one that involves a murder, a search warrant was served in the murder of Tupac Shakur. Now, I, in a previous episode, discussed the excellent documentary, which was originally on which was originally on USA Network, unsolved the murders of Tupac Shakur and the Notorious B.I.G., and it later was shown as a series on Netflix, and it's absolutely riveting, and it made me take seriously something that I had, and I confess, I had kind of brushed off as probably this t these two guys didn't like each other, and somebody got killed. Well, they both got killed, but there is tons more to it. And as it unfolds, it opens up into almost like a Russian nesting doll of just conspiracies upon conspiracies that, to pull out only the most cogent point at this point, Tupac may have been murdered by LAPD sheriff. I'm sorry, not LAPD, LA Sheriff's Department detectives who are moonlighting as hitmen. That is a possibility. I obviously am not naming anybody or accusing anybody because nobody's been charged with anything. But there is no statute of limitations on murder in Nevada, as in almost all states. And a search warrant was served yesterday in the ongoing investigation into the murder of Tupac Shakur. So that is a big deal. So, according to this evening's Washington Post, which means you may have heard it here first, which is pretty great, if I may say so. I like to be able to break some news once in a while. I'll just quote directly from the Washington Post as of about an hour ago. The investigation into the death of hip-hop legend Tupac Shakur took a new turn Tuesday as the Las Vegas police confirmed it served a search warrant in the case. The Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department said in a statement that the warrant was served in the city of Henderson, Nevada, on Monday as a part of the ongoing Tupac Shakur homicide investigation, and declined to comment further. Tupac was shot multiple times on September 7th, 1996, in a drive-by shooting after stopping at a red light near the Vegas Strip. Close quote. I'm just going to add that the Vegas Strip tends to be extremely safe. Part of that is a huge law enforcement presence. Part of that is it's mostly owned by the mafia. So, yeah, nothing's going to interfere with the tourist trade. Murders on the strip are really unusual. Okay, so take that for what it's worth. Resume the quote from this evening's Washington Post. As the Washington Post reported, the male shooter in a white Cadillac pulled up beside the 25-year-old rapper's BMW and opened fire. Tupac had been on his way to a club after watching Mike Tyson and Bruce Seldon in a world heavyweight title bout, and died 1 week later in a Las Vegas hospital from the gunshot wounds. No arrests were ever made in the incident, which spawned multiple conspiracy theories about who shot the recording artist. Police at the time said that Tupac and some of his friends had been involved in a fight inside a hotel before the shooting. Marion Sooj Knight, head of Death Row Records, was in the car with Shakur and was slightly injured in the shooting. I'm going to close the quote for a second and just mention that there was a fight that's recorded on video. There was a fight. Whether that had anything to do with anything is questionable. The fact that Sooj Knight was in the car and yet wasn't really harmed has struck many people, including myself, as suspicious. That ignores the fact, which I didn't know until I watched the documentary, that the way the shooting happened, that doesn't seem unlikely, okay? That Tupac was clearly the target, and that wouldn't strike me as being something that would be nonsense, So, to resume the quote from this evening's Washington Post, Las Vegas police did not answer the Post's questions about how often search warrants are issued in the case, Nevada doesn't have any statute of limitations for prosecuting a homicide case, according to the Associated Press. There's almost, close quote, there's almost never a statute of limitations on murder. If you do a murder, they can prosecute you till the end of your life. It doesn't matter. That's true. Resume quote. The Tupac Amaru Shakur Foundation, which is run by Shakur's sister, did not immediately respond to a request for comment. And they go on into Tupac's musical career and such. Anyway, so this is a big deal. I don't know what they're looking for. I don't know what they found. I do know the statement that was made in the documentary was that Death Row Records, which was run by Suge Knight, who is currently incarcerated for murder in an unrelated, at least apparently completely unrelated, murder that he ran over a person that I believe worked for him. He had a bad habit of solving employee disputes with quite a bit of violence. But he's in prison for murder right now. But the statement that was made in the documentary was that Death Row Records was, quote unquote, crawling with cops, that despite being a fairly open bloods gang member, Suge Knight loved hiring off-duty police officers to do, quote-unquote, security, which may mean a lot of things to a lot of people. But yes, that was kind of his deal. And the allegation made in the documentary is that the people, and there were two guys that, who I will not name because, again, nobody's been charged with anything. Everybody's innocent until proven guilty. But the documentary said that Tupac was killed by two LA sheriff's deputies who were also hitmen. And I have to say, their case was extremely compelling. It's an absolutely fascinating story. And I suggest anybody that has the opportunity to watch it watches Unsolved. I'm not sure where it's streaming right now. It was originally on USA, then it went to Netflix. I'm sure it's available if you care to pay a couple of bucks. That would not surprise me at all. So we will have to wait for further developments in the Tupac murder investigation, but things may be happening. It's very interesting. For the next and final weird news, breaking news, bear with me. I'm going to talk about disclosure. I know in the circles I run in, that's not a terribly popular opinion, but I think the disclosure movement, I won't even call it a movement, disclosure events have gone up a level. And from here, I'm going to be quoting from thehill.com, a fairly objective, I would say completely objective, political site. And bear with me. I know there's a lot of skepticism that the government's ever going to tell the truth. But I have some things to say about that, that hopefully will resonate a little bit and or at least maybe worth listening to. So yes, let's quote from The Hill as of, I believe it's today. Yes, it's this morning. They came out with this story. Non-human intelligence. Schumer proposes stunning new UFO legislation. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, along with a bipartisan group of five other senators, introduced extraordinary legislation on July 13th, suggesting that the U.S. government or private contractors may secretly possess recovered UFOs and, quote, biological evidence of living or deceased non-human intelligence. According to the legislation, Non-human intelligence is defined as any sentient, intelligent, non-human life form, regardless of nature or ultimate origin, which may be presumed responsible for UFOs. Given the decades-long stigma associated with the UFO topic, such stunning language is not included in bipartisan congressional legislation on a mere whim, let alone proposed by the Senate's top lawmaker. According to a statement accompanying the legislation, the 2017 disclosure of a previously unknown government UFO analysis program spurred a broad congressional investigation of unidentified anomalous phenomenon, in parentheses UAP, the government's new terminology for UFOs. The ongoing investigation, quote, uncovered a vast web of individuals and groups, quote, claiming knowledge of secret UAP-related programs and information. According to Schumer, quote, the sheer number and variety, unquote, of UFO-related claims, quote, led some in Congress to believe that the U.S. government was concealing important information regarding UAPs over broad periods of time, close quote. Moreover, as noted in the legislation, credible evidence and testimony indicates the federal government UFO records exist that have not been declassified as required by law. To that end, Schumer's legislation establishes an independent 9-member agency to collect, review, and declassify UAP records. If passed in its current form, law would mandate that all government UFO documents carry a presumption of immediate public disclosure. The proposed legislation follows explosive allegations by a former intelligence official, David Grusch, that secret UFO retrieval and reverse engineering programs were illegally hidden from Congress. Importantly, the powerful investigative body that oversees the nation's intelligence agencies found Grush's allegations to be credible and urgent. Moreover, the intelligence community's first inspector general, unquote, they didn't have one before, okay? So nobody was, like, overseeing the ethics and, you know, adherence to policy and procedure of the intelligence community until, and here we go again with the quote, appointed by President Obama, confirmed by the Senate, now a high-profile attorney in private practice, represented Grush as he proceeded through the formal whistleblower process. I'm going to step up, close quote. Some people have pointed out, well, if he was a real whistleblower, he'd be in jail. Congress changed the law specifically about this a few years ago because they felt they weren't getting the truth. So that's why he's able to go through official channels and be protected as a whistleblower. This is not Lou Elizondo, okay? It's not. It's a totally, I don't know if Grush is telling the truth or not. Obviously, I can't know that. But he's in a total different category than other people that have come forward. This is not Lou Elizondo. This is not that guy from the Air Force that was lying to everybody in the 90s, whose name is great now escaping me. But this is a person operating through the proper channels. And those proper channels have only been created in the last couple of years. To resume the quote from thehill.com, in an interview with News Nation, Senator Marco Rubio, Republican from Florida, vice chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, corroborated the broad contours of both Grush's allegations and Schumer's bipartisan legislation. According to Rubio, only one of two remarkable outcomes will ultimately explain recent developments. Either what Grush is saying is partially true or entirely true, or we have some really smart, educated people with high clearances and very important positions in our government who are crazy and are leading us on a goose chase. Most of these people, Rubio continued, have held very high clearances and high positions within our government. So ask yourself, what incentive would these people with that kind of qualification, these are serious people, have to come forward and make something up? Ask about the specificity of the allegations. Rubio stated that individuals with firsthand knowledge or firsthand claims are saying to us what we've seen out there in the public record, whether it's about legacy UFO programs or about current events. Echoing Rubio's comments and Schumer's statement, Representative Mike Gallagher, Republican from Wisconsin, who serves on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, stated recently that all sorts of UFO whistleblowers are coming out of the woodwork and telling Congress they've been part of this or that UFO program. According to Gallagher, last year's enactment of UFO whistleblower protections resulted in a variety of pretty intense conversations. Rubio and Gallagher's remarkable comments bolster true reports, citing multiple military intelligence and private sector officials, that defense contractors possess multiple craft of non-human origin. When legislation introduced in June would cut off funding for any secret UFO retrieval and reverse engineering programs, Senator Schumer's proposal goes even further. Provision of the new amendment declares that any and all recovered UFOs and biological evidence of non-human intelligence that may be controlled by private persons or entities shall be transferred to the U.S. government in the interest of the public good. Moreover, to ensure the eventual release of all government UFO documents and information, the new legislation requires a controlled disclosure campaign plan. In short, if the proposed 9-member review board deems any UAP documents too sensitive to release immediately, such records would be subject to a benchmark-driven plan with recommendations for the exact time that they may be appropriately disclosed to the public. Following a recommendation from the review board, the legislation established the president as the sole and non-delegable authority to disclose UFO-related records to the public. Given this elevation of authority directly to the president, it is likely that the Schumer-led Senate coordinated or consulted with the Biden White House before proposing such extraordinary legislation. And it continues, but that's the bulk of the story. Now, I have a number of things to unpack on that. And please bear with me. I know. We've heard this before. But again, these are top U.S. senators. This is Chuck Schumer. He is the leader of the majority party in the Senate. He's not Richard Doty, the guy I couldn't think of earlier, who's some Air Force guy pushing a grift. No, he is the top senator. This is Marco Rubio. And again, this is not a political show. I'm not commenting on anybody's politics. But you have, he's a former presidential candidate, a veteran U.S. senator, potentially a future presidential candidate. These are serious people. They have a lot of other things they could be doing. Okay, we're fighting a proxy war with Russia and Ukraine. Okay, there's the economy. Canada's on fire. There's any number of things they could be doing. And they're very serious about this. Now, that tells me this is kicking up disclosure several notches. This is not, you know, hey, I love talking about this stuff with my friends. And, you know, it's fascinating topics and we come up with all sorts of possibilities. We speculate. But nobody, neither me nor anybody I hang out with, is a senior United States senator, okay? This is serious. This is for real. Look at this aspect. Look at how polarized and divided U.S. politics is right now. Chuck Schumer is a liberal Democrat from New York. Marco Rubio is a conservative Republican from Florida. Those are not two guys that can agree on anything, but they can work together on this, okay? That's how much they want the truth. They feel that they've been lied to. And I'm going to make a couple of analogies, and bear with me, because I think these make sense. It has been pointed out a number of times that, well, we've heard this before. Okay, well, we haven't heard it from this level of people. And it would stand to reason, in my humble opinion, that there would be factions within the U.S. government, that Congress wants to know what's going on, especially people that, you know, are very powerful individuals. They would like the truth. And there are other people who are also quite powerful in the government who feel that the truth should not be let out, that it should be kept secret. There is, well, I referenced this in a previous episode. The October Surprise was a thing that was rumored to exist for decades. And the allegation was that in 1980, when radicals in Iran had taken US service members and diplomats as hostages, that the Reagan campaign, and that's not to say Reagan necessarily knew, because often people do things and don't want the person in charge to know, so they have plausible deniability. That happened in Watergate. Nixon had no idea they're going to break into that building. He learned about it afterwards when they got caught. Something may have similar have happened. But the allegation was out there that people in the Reagan campaign made it clear to the Ayatollah in Iran that don't let the hostages go before the election and we'll cut you a better deal. That was called the October Surprise. It was widely, of course, it was widely denied. For 40 years, actually several, it was over 40 years, that was a rumor that floated around. It was never proven, but it was widely alleged. Well, like a month or two ago, a aging career Texas politician admitted that, yeah, we totally did that. We couldn't talk to the Iranian radicals directly, but we being him and the governor of Texas, great, whose name is escaping me, but they went on a tour of the Middle East as members of the Reagan campaign and told everybody who would listen, and they talked to a lot of very important people, that don't let the hostages, tell the Iranians, don't let the hostages go before the election. This, we need this, okay? This will help us win, and then we'll cut you a better deal, which may have directly led to Iran-Contra. But yes, that happened. And the guy said, look, Reagan's dead. Carter's in hospice. It's time the truth came out. And he said, yeah, well, we totally did that. So just because something's been rumored before doesn't mean it's not true, okay? Sometimes the truth takes a long time to come out. And it comes out once everybody important is dead. And then we can admit that, yeah, that totally happened. That was reported in the New York Times, okay? That's as much as we can possibly confirm an absolute fact. They went from Middle Eastern leader to Middle Eastern leader, from Saudi Arabia to Egypt, telling them, let the Iranians know, don't let the hostages go too soon. We don't want Carter to win this election. If you hold them a little while longer, and think how incredibly unethical that is, how evil that is, that you're telling these radical terrorists to keep American hostages a little while longer just so we win the election, you know? That's what they did. And it finally came out like 2 months ago, okay? So, yeah, just because the truth's been denied for a long time doesn't mean it's not true, okay? To make another analogy, I must reference my favorite TV show of all time, Millennium, a spin-off of The X-Files, starring Lance Henriksen as a retired FBI agent who is kind of an empath or somewhat psychic. It's a fascinating show, and it starts off as more or less true crime and ends up very paranormal, psychically weird. It's fascinating. But yes, in the Millennium Group, again, this is an analogy. This is not what I'm saying is literally true, but it's, I think it kind of describes the situation. There are two factions, the Roosters and the Owls. The roosters want to wake everybody up and release all the secret information. The owls say no, it's still... The roosters say it's dawn. The owls say, no, it's still the middle of the night. We need to keep this quiet. Keep everything quiet. People aren't ready for this. I think that exactly parallels what's going on in the government right now at the highest levels. When I say the highest levels, well, does it get higher than Chuck Schumer, the majority leader in the Senate? Does it get higher than Marco Rubio? Does it get higher than four-star generals who probably don't want the stuff released? I don't think it really gets much higher than that, okay? There are roosters and there are owls. And the senators are roosters. They want to put the information out there. They want the truth. And I have to say, whatever else you think of his politics, Marco Rubio was pretty eloquent when he put that out there, that either one of two things is happening. Either there really are crash ships and dead aliens, or a whole bunch of people at high-level security clearances have been lying to us for some reason for years. Now, either one of those is pretty much a bombshell, okay? I have to agree with that completely. So I think disclosure this week has really cranked up several notches. And I don't know what's going to happen, but something I feel is going to happen. And I just put these caveats on it. If you're going to do the literal disclosure that people have been talking about, you can only do it once. Okay. If true, if there's one crash ship and one dead alien, that's the biggest news story in human history. You can only do that press conference once. After that, it's out there. You can't walk it back. There's no mitigating that. So obviously there's a lot of concern. If you're going to do that, you have to do it right. But that doesn't, I don't exclude that from the realm of possibility. So that's my two cents. I realize that may not be the most popular opinion, but I think it's worth considering. So in any event, on all of these stories, only time will tell, and I will certainly continue to follow them and continue to commentate and report. And I hope that you find this interesting and keep listening. This has been The Weird Part. I'm Vincent Trewell. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.